Psalm number 71 for a short reading, and verse number 4. Deliver me, O my God, out of the hand of the wicked, out of the hand of the unrighteous and cruel man. Proverbs chapter 12, please. The book of Proverbs and chapter 12. And we'll read verse number 10. A righteous man regardeth the life of his beast, but the tender mercies of the wicked are cruel. Chapter 17 and verse 11. An evil man seeketh only rebellion. Therefore a cruel messenger shall be sent against him. Now the epistle to the Hebrews, please, for a verse in chapter 11. Hebrews chapter 11, verse 35. Women received their dead raised to life again, and others were tortured, not accepting deliverance, that they might obtain a better resurrection. And others had trial of cruel mockings and scourgings, yea, moreover, of bonds and imprisonment. Verse 38, of whom the world was not worthy. May the Lord add his blessing to this selected reading of his word. You'll notice that in the verses I have read to you, the word cruel occurs, and in the first passage it speaks of cruel men. And in the second passage it speaks of cruel mercies. And then in the third passage it speaks of a cruel messenger. Whereas in chapter 11 of Hebrews, the word is of cruel mocking. These scriptures fit what I have observed and what most will know relative to the conditions that prevail in China tonight, and especially with those that know the Lord and are seeking to maintain a simple testimony to His name and to His grace in that vast, multitudinous land. The population of China tonight reaches over 1.13 billion. That's an enormous amount of people. And within that tremendous multitude, there is a very real, and thank God, an increasing number of sincere and truly saved people. I know that we can only give nominal figures, but the Chinese authorities themselves, looking at what they call the underground movement, they reckon that there must be anywhere between 50 to 70 million believers. Now that may sound incredible, but that is the estimate of the Chinese authorities themselves. And they know that these people, unless they are oppressed, they admit that the men with the Bible must be dealt with. Else there will be no communism left in China. And so, as you will have heard and known from our brother John Short's correspondence, those that receive it, the persecution has intensified tremendously in recent days, in recent months. Instead of it easing, as China would give the impression, actually it's intensifying. And so many of God's people are suffering very, very severe persecution at this time. And so I want you to realize that China's cruelty is tragic. Tragic. John has pictures of believers who were beaten to death. Some of you may have seen them transcribed in communications he has sent. And in our last visit to China in April this year, we met a brother who already has been in prison for 22 and a half years in the past. And after I first met him in a visit that I had a few years ago, we met him on a Sunday afternoon. And by Thursday, that brother was undergoing 36 hours of very, very tormenting interrogation. And that interrogation resulted in the authorities confiscating all the things that he had in his little hall, shall we call it. A long, long room, very long, about the length of the breadth of this hall, and one on top of the other, filled with benches. And he gathers over 500 people every Sunday for the gospel in Canton. And the authorities came and took away everything that he possessed. All his Bibles, all his hymn books, all the tapes, everything that he had in those buildings, those two lofts, and put a notice on the door, sealing the whole operation and threatening him even with a death sentence. Now, beloved, that is the picture that is being repeated throughout the borders of that vast, needy land. China's cruelty is tragic. I know that if you went to China on a holiday and invited someone or asked someone to let you see a church, in inverted commas, they would bring you to a very interesting building in a certain area, for example, in Beijing, and you would see 1,000 people sitting quietly and calmly undergoing worship or thanksgiving or whatever. And they will point out to you that there you are, you see, that's our liberty. We give religious liberty. And right enough, if you saw 1,000 people together, as you can any Sunday morning, you would feel that my words would need to be rethought or reconsidered, and you might even affirm a contradiction. But now let me point out that while there will be, I'm sure there are, true believers among that multitude, it's a very sad thing to know that those people have agreed under certain principles and conditions, and that is what gives them the right to operate. They are called the three self-help churches in China. And this was formulated way back in 1958 by the former Prime Minister, Chou Enlai. And Chou Enlai took aside a dear man whom I have met face to face, Mr. Alan Yun. And when that man in 1958 was brought before the Prime Minister personally, the Prime Minister said, "We're going to make the church in China independent." Well, that's the terms that he used. Alan Yun said, "We are already independent." But of course, his use was different to Chou Enlai's. He said, "You're going to have a communist supervisor." Alan Yun looked at that big man in the face and he said, "The church and politics do not mix." And then Chou Enlai said, "Well, We're going to do away with all these denominations, and you must be altogether irrespective. And Alan Yoon looked at him. He said, that would mean that we would be associated with things that we could not touch. And that man withstood Chow Enlai in 1958. That was the beginning of the free self-help church principle. And when Alan Yoon resisted, every word and every proposal that Chow Enlai made, when it was finished, Chow Enlai turned to his cohorts and said, there's something wrong with this man's mind. And he was taken away. And he wasn't seen for 21 years. 21 years. Now, Brother Alan Yoon told me that himself. He said, they sent me to the north of China. And they never gave me winter clothing. And he said, I lived often in a temperature of 30 degrees below. They wanted to kill me. And he said, I never had a cold the whole time I was there. I never even had a cough. He said, I've had many since. But I never had even a cough the whole time I was there. But he says, brother, I have one regret. Now you listen carefully, young man. I have one regret. And I'm looking at him, and we're in Beijing. And we're sitting together in a little room. And there are others there too. Brother John Short was there. Brother Jack Fung was there. My real friend and brother Eddie Harth was there. And other Chinese brethren from Beijing. And Alan Yoon looked me straight in the face. He says, but brother, I've one regret. And what is that? I said, that the Lord didn't count me worthy to die for him. I never heard a man say that in my life. I never thought a man could say that. And those tears were in his eyes, and I tell you, there were tears in mine. For I was looking at the man, probably the first man that ever I met, that I could absolutely say the crown of life will be on his head. Now this is the kind of thing, and this is what I mean, brethren. This is the situation in China. China's liberty is trivial. Trivial. Those dear people, there may be some saints amongst them, I'm sure there are, and many too, but you see, they're on the domination of the communist control. They're not allowed to read or preach publicly from Daniel, from Revelation, or any prophetic teaching. And other such restrictions are imposed in the free self-help system. Now, the people that I'm talking about, and the believers that we meet, and the work that's going on with the under the auspices of our brother John Short and brother Jack Fung, brother Silas Soule, and now brother Thomas Yu, these are the people that have stood away from that altogether, and the government knows that they are the real thing. The real thing. Now, obviously, brethren, they meet in silence. They meet in secret. And it's a very difficult thing to go amongst them because we're not allowed. And I'm speaking, when I say we, I'm speaking on behalf of those four associates that we have mentioned again, and we will mention them throughout the meeting. And I'm privileged to be able to link my name with them because we have gone with them to Beijing, to Shanghai, to Nanjing, to Xi'an, to Canton, and other such places in the last few years since I was with you. And in each of these places, we meet believers that are meeting in the essence of simplicity. Now, you might ask, how many assemblies are there? I have this to say, that assembly work in China with a capital A is non-existent. it was completely obliterated during those early years. The focus of assembly testimony was in the province of Jiangxi, with the capital Nanchang. That's where I was aiming for as a boy of 21 many years ago. And so I'm very cognizant of the whole area and of all that it stood for in those early days. Now the sad thing about it is this, brethren, all that has completely evaporated long, long ago. Brother John received word from the late Mr. Putnell, who came to reside in Australia after many years in the service, and he sent to Brother John all the locations that he remembered and knew ever so familiarly in the Jiangxi province. And John went with his brethren and could not find the slightest trace of anything in the whole area. Isn't that a very sad commentary on the work with which we were once associated? So you see, that is the point of Brother John's emphasis on the literature. Here are people that have come to know the Lord and are reading their Bible and are anxious for help, and there's no help forthcoming. The brethren can't go and live there. They can't go and have meetings. They can't be found mixing with the people because you only highlight their difficulty, and of course you direct the whole intensity to them. And even though they're glad to see us and glad to have us, they are really, really chancing a very, very real problem. Now you understand that. So this is what has brought about the tremendous literature work that our brethren are doing in Hong Kong. You want to see the value that has been placed upon CHM's Pentateuch, translated into Chinese, into 6 beautiful volumes. Now, I listen to comments. I try to follow the thing as carefully and as intelligently as possible. And I met a very well-placed Chinese in Hong Kong. Now, unfortunately, he's not in the Assembly Fellowship. He's in a denomination. But nevertheless, this man told me that having examined the literature that our brethren are distributing throughout China, he said, "Listen, Tom, there is nothing like it going into China from any other source." Thank God for that. And you know, when we were lost in Beijing, just 2 days before I had this bang, God was good, you know, beloved. I just got out of China in time. But never think about that. That's all past. God was good. But just at that time, when this thing must have been working, I didn't know a thing about it. We were wanting to get out of Beijing to get to other areas, and we could not get a way out, or a means to get out. All the planes were either full, and the other ones that were advertised were cancelled, and we never like to be in China on a Lord's Day, because we cannot associate with any area, as you know, in public meetings. So we always like to be in Hong Kong with the saints, and if necessary come back into China later. But we couldn't do it. And you know, when the Lord blocks the way, you wonder why. And so on that occasion in the hotel on a Thursday morning, the telephone went, and in a moment or so, John was obviously excited. And this is the story. A voice in broken English said, "Is that Mr. Short?" He said, "Yes." "Well, I'm glad to speak to you. I'm so glad you're in town, in the city. And all I want to do in this conversation," he said, "is to thank those people who were responsible for producing CHM in my language." Now, when John heard that, he readily recognized that this man must have had CHM in some other language. I don't think it was Irish. But nevertheless, he had it in some other language, hadn't he? And of course, it was in plain English. And it was. But his delight was to have CHM in his own language for the first time. And he just wanted to thank the people responsible. Now, I didn't know that he was talking to the man who was responsible. And John said, well, I thank the Lord for that, brother. And he said, could I know your name? And he said, yes. Could I meet you? No. He said, they're tracking me down. I'm under constant surveillance. I would be afraid to meet you. And I would be afraid you to meet me. Well, that just throws John into a challenge. And he's not even an Irishman. He's a good Australian. And he wouldn't let go. He said, look, brother, it'll not matter to me what happens, but we would love to meet you. And eventually he came. Now, this man was saved as a young man under German missionaries many years ago. Many years ago. And they must have introduced him to CHM and so on. Albeit. But here's a story. He said, when I was interested in presenting the gospel, I was arrested. And he said, I was put in prison for 12 years. 12 years. And the day of my release came, and he said, it was a very, very wonderful day. And he said, I just walked right out, and when I reached the gate, they re-arrested me. And they brought me back for another 16 years. Now, brethren, when you talk to a man like that, I tell you, it softens your heart. Not a soul here has been 28 years in prison for Christ. There's maybe some here haven't spent 28 minutes on their knees for him. There's a man who's spent 28 years in prison for him. 28 years. He said, when I came out, they'd taken away my wife. They'd taken away my children. Can't find them. Can't find them anywhere. John says, well, what are you doing? Well, he said, I'm preaching the gospel for nothing else to do. There's only one thing I can live for, he said, and that is the gospel of the Lord Jesus Christ. And John says, well, where do you come from? He said, I come from away down in southwest China. And he said, have you brethren ever come? I'll gather 1,000 people to hear the gospel. Well, it was well worth waiting behind to meet him. Now, you'll not be able to see him, but there he is. That's the brother. Just right there. That's one of the dearest photographs that I have, beloved. I look into that face near every day, and I thank God for the grace of God. I can bring a man through trial untold. I still want to preach the gospel. You young men, where are you here? Come on. Think of it. Would you be able to bear it? Would I be able to bear it? Is this just going to be a report that's going to tickle our ears? Or is it going to be a report that's going to motivate you to service the like of which this dear man has known for God? And so he disappeared. John has the details and hopes that someday he might be able to reach out to where this man is working. But it's very difficult. Very difficult. Now it's most a warning, you see, to see that here are brethren. Here are people that are serving God and are learning the truth of God from the literature that our brethren are distributing and disseminating in very, very attractive form. Lovely to see John Ritchie's books. The Tabernacle, Egypt of Canaan, the Feast of Jehovah, and a collection of all those valued works of Mr. John Ritchie, translated by our brethren in Hong Kong, Caleb, Ivan, and another brother, Weston Wong, that has recently come amongst them from America. a brilliant translator, and one of our Malaysian brethren, who's very, very gifted, is also translating for our brethren in Hong Kong, and reproducing valued material that God is using. And I want you to pray intelligently that this is the means by which the truth is being disseminated and distributed and propagated at this moment of time by our brethren. By our brethren. But the Holy Spirit of God is doing a greater work. For our brethren have come across a company of people in the Anhui province that are as poor as church mice and are strong in faith. And if you saw any photographs that John has sent of that little company, you'll look at them and you know to look at them, they're absolutely poor. But every sister has a blue, navy blue beret or cloth right round their head. Every one of them covered. And they all learned it from the same book as I hope you learned it from. There they are. And so that is how the work of the Lord is progressing. And you know, it would be better it kept going like that. Because if the door was open to everything and anything, you would know that the devil would seize upon that and destroy it and mar its simplicity. And so we trust that God will just overrule in His mercy and alleviate the poverty. The poverty is great. None of the believers has heat in their home in winter. None. First time I went to Shanghai, we went to the communist-controlled hotel, the Shanghai Hotel. And John invited a number of believers, about 14 of them, to come and have dinner. And we had a Chinese meal. And then when we resorted to our rooms, now I'm cutting out a whole lot of detail, we were talking and there were some children there. And then I suddenly heard the children cry. And I wondered what happened. But it was soon evident. The wives, the few sisters that were there with their children, went away into our bathroom and give the children a hot bath and wash their hair. And they washed their own hair and they all had a hot bath. And by the time they all left, when I went into the bathroom, I said, John, the water's not only running down the wall, it's running up the wall. And John, of course, in his Australian way, I hope they didn't use my soap. I said, no, they didn't have a bar here. I haven't seen as big a bar of soap in all my life. They bought it in the shop outside and they knew that they would get a hot bath. And I said, John, what was all that about? He said, Tom, that's the only hot bath they'll get this winter. I tell you, John's doing a great work. He knows everything. And he knows to get those people. And he knows to say, well, just carry on. Have a good bath. Have a good bath. You don't know anything about that. I don't know anything about that. I had a shower this morning. I have a shower every morning. Thank God for that. Winter or summer. But you see, brethren, they can't have that in the cold of China in wintertime. There are no means of heating. No means of heating. And that's why the heavy clothing is so vital. And that's why it's so valued. And we in the north of Ireland arranged, after we went back, for a container, and we sent 5 tons of clothing to Brother John and the workers there. 5 tons came from the north of Ireland 2 years ago. And John found that to be most timely because just that winter, the very, very severe floods had taken a lot of things from many of the believers, especially those peasant farmers that I was telling you about. And it was a great thing for John to have such a resource
and to carry it back into those dear people to give them some measure of comfort in their long, cold winter. China's poverty is terrible. Now, I'd like to say more, but just let me get to this. We went to Xi'an. Xi'an was probably the most oppressive place that I've ever been in. Xi'an is in the northwest, not very far northwest, but it's in that direction. It's about 4 hours flight from Shanghai. I'm not going to tell you about the flight. It was probably the first Dakota that was ever made. It was like an old bus that did, not like the Thompson buses, you know. This was like an old bus that we had years ago in Belfast. And you put your luggage up on the roof, and if it went this way, the luggage went the same way. Well, now this plane was exactly the same. You just put your luggage up there. There was no locker. There was no string. And these boys put the trolley up there, and they put everything up there. And of course, when the plane did this, everything came tumbling down. And the lady, who was very nice and was very helpful, she arrived with a huge kettle, big black kettle, and showed up the aisle pouring out Chinese tea. It was great. You never saw anything like it in all your life. Not like the Singapore Airlines or the Malaysian Airlines. We're here on the China Airlines, and while the whole thing's going on, and I'm getting a bit apprehensive about the noise, John says, "Did you hear the noise?" I said, "I did." Oh, he said, "That's the pilot turning up the rubber bands." And after you get that fright over you, he looks at you to see how you're taking it, and he says, "You know, you're on the CAAC. I said, "What's that?" "China Airlines always crash." So it was very comforting. But we got to Xi'an safely, thank God. And on the way, a man asked us, had we got transport? We said, no. Well, he said, "Look, if you get to Xi'an at this time of night, there'll be no transport, you know. And how you'll ever get to your hotel?" But he said, "What hotel are you going to?" "We're going to the White Swan." Well, he said, "I'm going to the same one. Travel with me." And of course, we agreed. And I went for the luggage, and John went for the van, and Jack went for the hand luggage. And we eventually arrived to find that the van was surrounded by 4 or 5 soldiers or policemen. So I said to John, "What's wrong?" He said, "I don't know, but there's difficulty." And it so happened that they are impounded the van. They said because the man had come into the airport territory to lift us. Well, any van would have to do that. But really, you have to understand that when these men see a face like mine and a face like John's, they know there must be money about it. So they impound the thing, and this is what happened. For we had to go to the police station, and we sat there in freezing cold. It was 5 degrees below. And we had to sit there for about 45 minutes. We thought we're never going to get out. And the whole argument over whether we'd pay the fine or not, for absolutely nothing. They wanted 300 FEC, foreign exchange certificate, and we reduced it to 150, or we'd never have got out. For nothing. And we were fined 4 times. When they see you in a taxi, they hail the taxi and say he went in front of a bus. And of course the taxi man's fined, and he knows that. They know that we have to pay the fine, and the taxi man pays them a bit, and that's the way things go. Boy, it was terrible. Now listen, when we went to Xi'an, we went to reach a young woman called Dorcas. And when we got there, we found that Dorcas was in prison. So we were disappointed, but we met other believers. And came the Saturday night before we left. I was sitting in a hotel, having our lunch, having our dinner, and we saw 3 young women come in. And we knew they were looking for us. We could see they were believers. They came over and greeted us, had a little chat, invited them for a coffee. And then one of them says, Dorcas is outside. We couldn't believe it. Now, Dorcas had just been released from prison on the Thursday, and we didn't know it. And she was standing out in the dark, afraid to come in. Because everything is photographed on television. So Jack went out with one of his sisters, and eventually Dorcas came to the table. Young woman, 31 years of age. I never saw the marks of oppression more than I did on that young woman's face. Now, according to what I learned is this, that young woman sees more people brought to Christ in Xi'an than the authorities can suffer. She has a wonderful testimony. And I asked John on my last visit in April, although I was there since, but I'm thinking of China. I was in Hong Kong since. What is the latest about Dorcas? And the latest about our sister Dorcas tonight is this. She has been taken to a gulag, and nobody knows where she is. And it would be a great mercy if she was in heaven. Now, beloved, let that sink into your heart. China's cruelty is tragic. But the saints of God are being sustained. And thank God for the ministry that's going on, the type of which we have heard today, of love and hospitality and care by our brethren that are laboring to alleviate something of the poverty and the cruelty of China. Now, we had 4 weeks in Japan, and nothing could be more in contrast than Japan. We had 4 weeks of one of the most soul-filling experiences I've ever had in any country. When I worked in the aircraft factory as a young fella, we had a young man that came about the place, and he was so like a Japanese, he was called for a nickname during the war, Burma Road. That's all we knew him as. And one Monday morning, Burma Road came in to me and he said, "Tom, I got saved last night." I said, "That's good, Burma Road." I don't think he even knew his name. And I said, "Well, where did you get saved?" He said, "I got saved in Parkgate Gospel Hall." I said, "That's even better." I said, "I preach in Parkgate many a time." Now, that was Mr. Jim Curry. Mr. Jim Curry. And Brother Jim Curry has labored for God for over 40 years in Japan. More fluent in Japanese than any local person there, I'm sure. For I actually heard him correct a Japanese in his own language. Brother Jim is very, very eloquent in Japanese. Now, Japan is rather insular. The workers are tremendous brethren. Those that I met were most admirable and most commendable, and I enjoyed meeting them, every one. But they had one difficulty. They couldn't speak English. And therefore, over the years, they are isolated because of their rather insular outlook. And it has been the mind of the assemblies for quite some time to bring a ministry to them and to the saints. And so, Brother Jim Hutchison has been invited. And then I was invited. And then Brother Jim Allen was invited, which reminds me, our Brother Bill said very many things there, but he just put the wrong name on Revelation. It's not Jim Flanagan, it's Jim Allen. Right? Now, Mr. Jim Allen has been invited, and last year, Mr. Jack Hay from Scotland. Now that's the reason I was there. The assemblies feel it would be useful for them to hear ministry of other brethren that move in the way the Lord has brought us. And therefore, over that period, we started at Fuchu, an area in Tokyo where Jim lives and labors. And then we went north to Morioka, came down a slight distance to Sendai, and then down to Yokohama below Tokyo, and then right across to the western border of the country, and to a place called Kanazawa. That's right. And then to Tomai, and then down to Osaka, and then to Izumi, and back up to Daiko in Tokyo. 9 assemblies visited in 4 weeks. Now, it was most enlightening. Wonderful to see the courtesy of the saints. Wonderful to enjoy their hospitality. And the only difficulty about it is it's a little bit raw. A little bit raw. When you get raw fish and raw chops and raw beef and raw a few other things, you thank God that He gives you grace not only to get it down, but you know the rest. And thank God we are able, by the goodness of His mercy, to pass ourselves with our Japanese brethren to the full. And we were able to sit cross-leg or whatever weight leg. Your earth tables are just about knee-high, as you know. And the noodles and all the rest. Well, I don't know that you may just relish it, but the brethren were, and the saints were, I may say, you allow me to say this, they were really encouraged that we could just, you know, fit in. But being in the Orient for so long, it was really no difficulty, except that I like kway chow. Brother Mark down there knows that. And it's well fried, and this was a kind of raw, hard to handle. But nevertheless, we had no difficulty. The Lord brought us through the whole time, and we didn't need even an Alka-Seltzer or anything like that to subdue the other things that can happen. So thank God for that. And you know, beloved, let me get back to the fact that God has raised up great men there. And we met quite a number of them. They extended their hospitality to us and their fellowship as full-time servants, and sat with us and read the scriptures, asked questions, meditated, tried to get as much information as they could on the Word of God. And I needn't tell you that they're most intelligent. When we were up at Morioka, right up in the north part of the middle island, I met a brother at the meeting. Of course, he was a very clever chap. He had a head exactly like mine. That made him very attractive to me. And he had a Bible that was thicker than my span. My span. I said, "Brother, you could speak English. I said, I'd like to see your Bible." Well, he said, "I interleaved it myself." I said, "That's very good." When I came to the New Testament, it was interleaved. It was a Japanese Bible, but it was interleaved. And it had the Greek New Testament on each page in Greek. Now, when I looked at it, I couldn't decide whether it was a print or a copy or an old Greek Testament cut up and stuck in, or whether it was done by hand. And I asked him, and he said, "Well, really, I did it all by hand." Not bad, eh? Now you see, beloved, if you're not going to go in for the things of God, remember, God's bringing other men into it. That's the point. And all the way up in the north of Japan tonight is that man with that resource and that interest in his New Testament, as to acquaint himself with every word in the Greek text by hand, and to have it ready in his Bible. I tell you, when you minister to men like that, you understand what it's all about. And thank God for the progress of the testimony amongst these brethren. And there are 115 assemblies in Japan. Thank God for the memory of Bobby Wright and the great Tom Hay from Vancouver and the present Leonard Mullen and many, many more brethren whom God raised up and sent to that land, and they've left a testimony. Now, there's always a sad bit, but I'm not going to mention that. There's always the other side. But just leave it. Pray for the work in Japan. Pray for our brother Jim. At times he's not too well. He was with us for our conference in Malaysia in June. The saints had him for a full month. I had to leave him there. And he proved himself to be very efficient in the things of God. He does a tremendous literature work. He's a powerful writer in Japanese. He actually tells us, told my wife and I, he dreams in Chinese. I can hardly speak in English, never mind dreaming it. But he dreams in Japanese, if you will. Well, now that's good, isn't it? That's, you see, what God can do, brother. And you see, he's just an ordinary fella. And God has raised him up and has used him mightily for God in Japan. Thank God for men of this caliber that stand firm for what is right. And it was lovely to move to those assemblies and be at home. Be at home. Be at home. To be welcomed by brethren of a strange tongue. And you don't mind what I say. God forbid that I should glory. But I got through to them so well. You know what they said? They put their arms around me and said, if you were 20 years younger, we'd never let you go. Well, that was good, wasn't it? Many another one would kick you out and say, never come back. But they were different. And you know, it was a surprise to me, because I never thought the Japanese would be like that. See, in Malaysia, we get a kind of an attitude against them for all the atrocities they wrought in lovely Malaysia during the war. And I got that kind of a feeling about them. But my, when I saw the grace of God, that did all the things. That was different. Now, this year, when we left in December, we went directly to India. And we were in India for 30 days. That was tremendous. 30 days in India. Bombay and the area. There are 33 assemblies in Bombay. The brethren there had an exercise about conference, the type of which we had today. Because, generally speaking, what is current there is conferences of a particular nature for preachers, for young men at Bible schools, which these men and brethren were not too happy about, and elders' conferences and workers' conferences, and all a selective principle. And here were brethren that were concerned about the more comprehensive type, that all the believers could come without difficulty. So in Bombay, they never had that. And whenever Brother John went for a marriage that took place between an Indian brother and an Indian sister, who's presently in fellowship in Chunwan, they asked John to come to Bombay for the wedding. And he did. And he ministered the word of God at the wedding. And these brethren who were exercised gathered that our Brother John could be of help. And when he said he would come, he said, well, I'll bring another fellow. And of course, you know who that was. And that's how I got there. So anyhow, we were there for the conference, and another worker, Brother Charlie John from Agra, shared in the conference very, very acceptably. I give credit to Brother Charlie John tonight for his abilities. Just a young man, and living very, very simply away yonder in Agra. I'll say something about it in a moment. Then we went to the assembly in Santa Cruz, that's an area of Bombay, and we had a lovely week of ministry with the saints there that speak English very perfectly. And remember, all the time they were killing other in the street by the hundreds. It was, you would think that I was at home, but really I didn't like it too well. It was terrible rioting, and at times it was very dangerous, but the Lord brought us through. And then we went to Borivali, a little assembly on the outskirts of Bombay, and then we went to Vasai, another village north of Bombay, and there we had five nights gospel meetings. 300 seats set out in a square, and a platform raised, and five nights straight gospel meetings. They were wonderful. Pigs and goats and bullocks and everything else attended, but that didn't matter. The people were undisturbed, and we had Hindus, Muslims, Roman Catholics, and supposed Protestants, and all the rest. They all attended, and the meetings were a real encouragement, and there were several contexts that cheered the heart of our brethren, and they are following them up to this very moment. And then we went to Agra, which houses the great Taj Mahal, and we enjoyed the time there with our brother Charlie John. I had two Bible readings in the 4 or 5 days, 2 days, two readings each, and then gospel at night. And then we went to Delhi. A little time with the saints in North Delhi brought us back again to Bombay. Now, my closing word. There are 900 assemblies in India. And there are 650 workers. Indian workers. Mostly living in very, very simple circumstances. Now, would I could say more. But I was interested to ascertain why there was such fruitfulness in India. And I met an old man, an old brother living in one of the flats pertaining to the hall in Santa Cruz in Bethel. I went to have coffee with him and his wife, who was very feeble. I said, "Brother, could you tell me what's the secret of it all?" And Manny started. And I wish I had time to tell you it all. I'm just going to tell you one bit. He said, "Many years ago, brother, there was a German brother came to this country and he worked with a mission. And when he read his Bible," he said, "he found that the mission and the Bible didn't agree. Very few of them do. And he wrote to the mission and he told them what he's learning from his Bible. And the mission said, 'Well, look, if you continue to learn that from your Bible, you'll have to leave.'" Now, this was away in 1880-something. It wasn't yesterday. But the more the man read the Bible, a German missionary from Germany, the more he read the Bible, the more he found his position was incompatible with the truth of God. So he said, "Well, there's the position." And they wrote him a letter and said, "You'll have to leave." So one day he called the bullock cart man. And he said to the bullock cart man, "I want you to put all my stuff in the cart." But he says, "Listen, I have only 1 rupee. That's all I have." And he says, "When you go the distance that a 1 rupee will take me, tell me." And the man says, "All right, which way do you want to go?" He said, "I don't know." He says, "You don't know?" "No, I don't know." He said, "Just you go whichever way you will." So he got onto the cart and the bullock man took him down the road. And he said, "This is it. You've gotten the distance of your 1 rupee. And Brother Nagel got off the bullock cart. And he took his stuff and he sat by the road. He said, "Lord, it's getting dark. I have nowhere to go. So I'll pray." And he got down at the roadside and he prayed. And when he opened his eyes, he looked across the road and he saw prayer room. He hadn't seen that before. And he went across and he knocked the door. An Indian brother came out. He said, "Can I help you?" "Yeah," he said, "sir, I've nowhere to go for the night. Could I stay here?" The man says, "Who are you? Where you come from?" "Well," he said, "you know, I've been reading my Bible. And I was put out of my house. And I've nowhere to go. But I love the Lord. And I want to obey Him." The man put his arm around him. He says, "Brother," he says, "come in, do you see this?" And he pointed to a group of believers on their knees, praying to God that God would send them a man to help them. That was it. "Except a corn of wheat fall into the ground and die, it abideth alone." And Nagel died. 1 rupee. And that's it. But God was at the other end. And he found a little assembly he never heard of before. And they received him without a letter. Oh, and they just got him in. And what happened? They introduced him to the great Hanley Bird. And on they went. And he saw hundreds of assemblies formed. That's it, brethren. You have more than 1 rupee. What about it? God bless us.